Let's turn to Nehemiah and that passage that we read, chapter 6 into chapter 7. From chapter 6 and verse 15. We come back to Nehemiah and the city of Jerusalem, an ancient city, as we have read of it, where there is still a city today, but a city of vastly different character from the time, except insofar as it is still filled by men, sinful men, as it was then. But what does that city have to do with us? It is 2,400 years ago that these things took place. It has a lot to do with us because it is God's chosen city. That was the way that God chose to deal with men in those days, that there was that place. Frequently through the Old Testament we learn that Jerusalem was the place where he had set his name. This was the place where God had chosen for a time to live among men. It's not that men could constrain him, but he chose to set his name there. But at the time that we've been reading, this city had been broken. And as a result, they were insignificant. It was a laughingstock. It was an object of ridicule. But it was the city that had God's name, and so he was an object of ridicule. Where is your God, they say, as the psalm had it. We've been reading how this city was rebuilt, how God sent a man for the moment, and God's city rose up again. It rose in spite of the enemies and the obstacles that they faced. There were enemies outside who approached the city to under attack, subtly to begin with, but then more blatantly. There were troubles inside. There was the disunity, there was the disregard of people, one for the other. And in particular, the most recent passage that we read, we found that the leader himself, God's chosen man, came under particular attack. And the special attack was the false words, with the power that words have. But for all that, the task was done. The wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. The task was done. In spite of all these obstacles and opposition, eventually the job was done. There were still some things to be attended to. That was particularly noticeable in the previous section where the wall was finished but the gates were not in. We find in this section, in chapter 7, verse 1 particularly, that the doors were hung, the wall was complete. But there are matters that still need attention that are reflected in these verses, and that it will always be that way, where God chooses to dwell amongst men on this earth. But I think one of the most wonderful things about this passage is that when the wall was done, it turned things on their head. I said this morning that we need to remember what is real, what really does count in life. And this, I think, we find, again, reminded of it in this chapter. What had been attempted by the enemies of Jerusalem came back on them. And that is usually the way it will be, because God does care for his people. We find here that Nehemiah was vindicated. He was probably also very relieved that the work had reached this point, but there were still a number of things to be sorted out. What I want to just point out, first of all, this evening from this chapter is how the enemies were disheartened. Then just to dwell on what it signifies that the wall was finished. We've read it in the in chapter 6, verse 15, and then also the wall was built in chapter 7, verse 1. It is something of importance. The city was large and spacious at verse 4, the next section, and so on. And then, thirdly, that people were needed. First, that the enemies were disheartened. Also, that the wall was finished. But still, people were needed. So first of all, then, the enemies were disheartened. And I confess, when I came back to this chapter and read in verse 16, that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God, I was delighted. I've been wrestling my way through to chapter 6 from the beginning of Ezra, looking at the trouble that the people have been bearing. And then you come to this, and the whole picture is flipped, and the reality comes through. It's delightful. It reminds me, too, where in Acts chapter 17, some of Paul's friends, Paul got out of the city, and some of his friends were then arrested and hauled up, and it was the accusation against them was, these are the ones who have turned the world upside down. But that's only the world as people knew it. The world as people know it is in itself turned upside down. When the gospel comes in and people's lives are changed and the city wall is built, that's when things are restored to what they should be. It looks the reverse, but the enemies here are disheartened, not God's people. The ungodliness of men is to try and turn the tables on God. That's what Tobiah and Sanballat and Geshem and the others around them had been about. Now all their efforts, they're disheartened because all those efforts have come to nothing. The world is righted. Not what we think of as upside down, the wrong way up. It's righted, it's put right. It's as though the boat capsized so long ago that people are used to seeing it upside down. But now it's up, you can see, that's how it works. God's name is restored to its rightful place of honor because his name is on this city. The enemies were disheartened. I would put it this way. That Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem had eventually been worn down by their own interference. And they always will be when we live with God. They always will be. John says in his first letter, chapter 4, he says, "You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world." Here were the enemies. They perceived, they saw, they understood that this work was done by our God. Verse 16. It's the only explanation they could come to. After all, they did say that it would only take a fox to climb on the wall and it would knock it down. They weren't very impressed with the job. They weren't very impressed with the people. But the wall was done. God's hand is in this, they said. Sometimes even the most resistant have to say that there's more to things than meet the eye. That's why my weakness and your weakness is more often than not a good thing. Because the things that come about that we might be involved in, when they do come about, people must say, God is at work. That's a good thing. That's the best way. When remarkable things do happen, it has to be God at work. The enemies were disheartened because they perceived that this work was done by our God. It was a revelation to them that the God of Nehemiah and of Jerusalem was greater than their gods. It didn't stop them necessarily. There's a suggestion here, the way that it's recorded, that there were still a variety of efforts made to undermine what had happened. It's hard to say exactly which period Nehemiah refers to from verse 17. In those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came to them. And you see the Tobiah appears towards the end of Nehemiah as well in a very unsavory light because of this. And then too in verse 19, they reported his good deeds before me, reported my words to him. It was all to infiltrate, to undermine, and to see if they could again reverse the matter and dishearten Nehemiah and those around him. So there were still efforts being made, but at least so far they had been forced to the position of recognizing, acknowledging that this work was done by God. What a testimony it is that the wall was finished in 52 days. It was an excellent piece of work. Might not have been the very finest wall to look at, but it was a wall. It was a defense. They could surround the city. It was quite a spectacular achievement, and one that was quite beyond this motley crowd that had made this effort. But it was not beyond God, as he upheld them and worked through them. These people testify. It's the enemies of God. It's the enemies of his people who bear witness that God has built it, this city. It is God's city. He built it, and he goes on building it. And so the wall was finished. The enemies were disheartened because the wall was finished. The wall was finished through all sorts of difficulties, through various obstacles that we've talked about, we've read about and learnt about. The work continued. Work has persisted. They made a plan so that they could carry on. There's a neighbor who's doing a major project. They bought the house a couple of doors down, and they've been working on it since before they could move in. And it's running way over. And I talked to the chap the other day, and he said, well, they discovered a problem in the plans that they had of their modifications. The weather was a problem. All sorts of things were setting them back. And so it was with the people around Nehemiah. All sorts of setbacks. But the work has carried on. If you read the records, I think it can be a little bit like, you know, when you go through the city perhaps, or even just in the suburbs, you see these big hoardings around a plot of land, and you think something's going on in there, but it's very hard to see what's happening. And those hoardings, they sit there for ages sometimes, and they're a bit of an eyesore. And that's what people start talking about. They say, just wish they'd get on with the job. But then they're taken away, and here's this gleaming new building, a real asset to the neighborhood, and it's all been worthwhile. And we've been a bit like, as the readers, and anyone reading Nehemiah, is a little bit like the one who can mostly just see the hoarding. You know there's people busy in behind there, but now it's been taken away, and the job is complete. While we do read about all those obstacles and the problems, let's always remember that they carried on working right through. It didn't stop. Every day there was a bit more, and a bit more, and a bit more, for 52 days. And on the 52nd day, it would seem that it was then that the last gates were hung and secured. There were all those destabilizing influences. There was that infiltration that we read of even here, of Tobiah in these verses. Think about all of those people that were around, all that they were doing to try and put a stop to the building of the wall all this time. I want you to consider just for a moment how those people, with that opposition in their spirit, how they came to be there at that particular point, just for those 2 months, 52 days. Sanballat and Tobiah were well entrenched in that place. Their alliances with the Arabs and others so that they could call up their armies, that was well entrenched. There were those people that we read of in chapter 5 where they had been oppressing one another amongst the Jews. And that had obviously been going on for some years, not just 2 months, since Nehemiah arrived. For generations, hostility to God and his people and his city had been there. Or else Jerusalem would have been rebuilt by now. In Jerusalem, amongst God's people, had been neglect of God's law. But oppression of one another. We just read last Sunday, we read Exodus 21, how you were to treat your slave or the one who had to serve you for money. And they had gone against that. For the people around, they'd been building up hostility to God's name. For the people in the city and those who were Jews, they'd been neglecting God's name and God's law. For some time before this, they were all there in place at this time. And I think we see two things. We see, first of all, that it was all in God's purpose, so that out of it would rise up this great demonstration of his glory, to dishearten those enemies. But we do also see the years in which the powers who are enemies to God are at work, have been at work. Let's bear that in mind. This is not just a blip on the horizon. It's not just something that suddenly pops up out of nowhere. But all of a sudden, Tobiah appears out of the mist with an evil spirit. It's a pattern. It's a history that leads to this point. And that's what's so remarkable about the wall being finished, that led to the enemies being disheartened. And let's find confidence in that. Because although all of those things were in place, that the powers that were seeking to quash God's people and to bring them down, although they had been building up over time, they didn't win. The wall was built. The city was built. Why? Because God will have a city, a place to live amongst his people, a place to call his own. It was Jesus who said to his disciples, he said, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not be victorious against it. I will build. I will build my church. I will build my city. It was Jesus who said that, the one who conquers death. God works not only through that physical city in all its insignificance way back then. He continues to work to build a place where he will bring his people together to live amongst them. Jerusalem, through the Old Testament, it's always been a symbol of exactly that. You take Zechariah chapter 14, who lived in the same times as Nehemiah and Ezra. It tells us of all the nations coming to Jerusalem. But that's a foretaste. That's looking forward to what is all the more clear in the last chapters of Revelation. Again, the New Jerusalem, the place that will have no sun because God dwells in the midst of it. There's a water river of life coming through it because God lives in the midst of it. God himself is on the throne in the middle of that city. And that city is the very people of God. And so for this city in Nehemiah's day, once the walls were finished, there was also a people needed. And a true city does need people. It's more than just walls. There are places all over the world where ancient civilizations have left ruins of their cities. It's only stone walls, perhaps broken walls. But they're left. There's no people there. They're not true cities. And Jerusalem needed people. Now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few, chapter 7 and verse 4. And the houses were not rebuilt. I take my hat off to the people of Jerusalem, having built the wall before they built their houses. Excellent. They built the place that would have God's name on it before they built their own houses with their name on it. Jerusalem needed people, purely practically. That's why the walls needed rebuilt, because no one had lived there for so long. The walls will crumble again if no one is there to keep them. But even more than that, this city is God's city. It needs God's people. It's not to be an empty monument. It needed to be a living city. And to accomplish that, we see first of all, and it is only very brief, we see first of all how Nehemiah chose, I was going to say a leader, but two leaders. He was still going to be there for a while himself, you would think, if you look at the dates and the arithmetic, but he had to give charge of the city in chapter 7 and verse 2 to my brother Hanani. Does anyone remember meeting him before? He was the one who came and brought news to Nehemiah in Susa, in the king's palace of the state of the wall. But also to Hananiah, the leader of the citadel. But that's not all that Nehemiah has to say about him. This is a wonderful testimony. What a reputation. Hananiah was a faithful man and feared God more than many. Reminds me of Paul telling what the various qualifications of an elder or an overseer in the church should be, one of which is he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach. Here's an excellent testimony of a man. A faithful man feared God more than many. The fear of God appears in a couple of places, other places in Nehemiah, only just a couple, or three in particular. But remember too that in the previous section, on a couple of occasions, Nehemiah said the attacks against him as the leader, they were trying to make us afraid. But in contrast is the fear of God, the way that transforms life. He prayed for it in his first prayer in chapter 1. He prayed that those who would fear God's name would know God's strength. And then in that key chapter 5, where there was that conflict amongst God's own people, it tells how the rich and the nobles who were oppressing the poor needed to return to the fear of our God. And at the last part of that chapter, where we learn of how Nehemiah himself handled the matter, he dealt with it in a very different way. He did not place a burden on anyone in the province because he did fear God. The fear of God is a very important thing to Nehemiah. That's why he took this man and gave him the responsibility for Jerusalem. This is a thing he admired, somebody who feared God rather than men. These were trustworthy men. Paul writes to the Colossians regarding servants, but it's a principle that applies to all in every service that we have to offer. He says in Colossians chapter 3, verse 22 and following, "Obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God." That's Hananiah. "And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance." And in the New Testament context, "for you serve the Lord Christ," as indeed Hananiah ultimately did. Because he feared God, Nehemiah was confident in putting this responsibility in his hands. So two key people that were needed for the city, and this is their qualification, the fear of God. And then also other people surely were needed. He says that the city was large, but the people in it were few, and it seems to be connected with this that he then gathered the nobles and so on to take a register of all the people, and then follows the initial register, which you would understand it or anticipate was going to be updated on the basis of that for the people that were there now. It's not told us specifically, that any of these were then asked to come and to live in Jerusalem, although there is a sense, as the two things are tied together, that this might have been in Nehemiah's mind. Perhaps that exercise in examining the record was a prelude to asking those who did belong to the city to ensure that they lived there. But it was in order to make sure that the city was looked after. There were the guards back in verse 3 who were to ensure that the city was well cared for example. And the other part of it is how the priests, as you go through that further list, the priests and the gatekeepers, the singers, the Levites, these were all vitally important for the service of the temple in the city. They were needed in Jerusalem. And perhaps some of them had gone elsewhere. They needed to be brought back. God's worship should be maintained there. Remember, it is God's city. The wall was built to preserve its peace, to make that worship possible. And it's by that worship that it was also becoming a home to many, when they could then rebuild their houses. And so as we are moving on through this account of those days so long ago, we have met this great achievement. The wall is finished in a remarkable time, in such a way that it demonstrates God's hand was in it. As I look through this chapter, as I look at what was accomplished here, the real wonderful accomplishment, not for a moment do you see Nehemiah looking for praise for himself. He knew that it was God's city. That's why he cared so much about it. That's why he grieved over it when he heard the news back in chapter 1. That's why he took so long to pray over it and to seek God's will. That's why he delights, I believe, in telling how even the enemies had to testify that this work was done by our God. God's city. God's been at work in this. It's wonderful to be part of it. Put yourself in Nehemiah's shoes. What a glorious thing to be involved in this, to be used by God to build his city, to restore his people, to restore his own honor. God was at work. And this should be an encouragement to us too. It is an encouragement. Let us take it. But we can also be confident in God's work today. Let God's enemies be disheartened. Devote yourself to God and his leading. Don't be afraid of men, but fear God. Let God's enemies be disheartened, because that is the way it will be. Be ready. That was Nehemiah. The enemies were disheartened, but he still made sure the gates were secure. He had an understanding of the forces that were against him. He looked for every way, setting over the people these wonderful men to build up the people. But there was also looking out that the people would be added to. As you might remember, at the end of Acts chapter 2, when we learn of the great thousands who came to believe in Christ Jesus after that Pentecost sermon, the chapter finishes, and those who would be saved were being added to the church daily, because God's people were burning with this gospel claim. It is a gospel claim. Just as much as Nehemiah would have had a claim on anybody who belonged to Jerusalem in this whole list, he had every right to go and to say to them, God gave you a place in the city, you take it. It is a claim of the gospel on all men, that the men might be added together to make up the city of God. And let us be thankful that we have an entry to the city that this is pointing to, God's great city, so much greater still than Nehemiah's Jerusalem. And when that city appears, truly then all God's enemies will be disheartened and will not rise again. But just so far this evening, and pray that God will bless his word to us. Let us now pray together.